Hello, everybody. I'm Lou Dobbs, and this is the Great America Show. Welcome. We're coming to you from that undisclosed location again today. Great to have you with us. And there is good news. The social media giant Meta, owned Facebook and Instagram, decided to reinstate President Trump. The President of the United States denied his social media accounts for 2 years. Mark Zuckerberg banned President Trump to keep him off social media, along with Twitter, and shocked the nation in doing so. Now, President Trump can once again entertain and inform the nation on social media. Elon Musk restoring the president's Twitter account 2 months ago. It's still unclear when and whether he will return to Twitter, given his relationship with his own social media platform, Truth Social. It's good to have him back, no matter what. History won't be kind to Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg, titans of tech, but authoritarian tools of big tech and the left. Today, we take up this new Congress and how much work they have to do to help free the country of the left-wing madness of the Biden regime, and they have to figure out how to roll back the regime's policies that have brought in 5 to 6 million illegal immigrants, a wide-open border that no longer is defended, and which is effectively in the control of the Mexican drug cartels, thanks to President Biden. And of course, the incredible Biden document dump. If you're counting, there are now 5 stashes of highly classified papers and the possibility of a dangerous breach of national security. There have been so many of these top secret papers spread around that there's no question that Biden is in trouble. Considerable trouble. And he had no authority to do any of this. There is no reasonable explanation why he had these documents in his home, his garage, or his Chinese communist-funded think tank. That think tank called the Penn Biden Center. Top secret documents that his personal attorneys liberated from a closet at that center. Again, how did he take those documents out? They were, after all, top secret and not his. Why did he have the documents there? The circumstances separate Biden from the Trump document case in lots of ways. But first of all, because the documents belong to the president, not the archivist, not the DOJ or FBI or Barack Obama. Though the FBI did act as if they did own those documents when they motored into Mar-a-Lago. And you've probably noticed the Department of Justice went radio silent on those documents within just a few days. They knew they were in trouble and big trouble. Joining us now from the Center for Renewing America is Jeff Clark, attorney, former top Justice Department official. And Jeff, great to have you back with us. Good to see you. Let's start with good old Joe and his, it seems, never-ending fondness for lifting top secret documents that don't belong to him and putting them in places he shouldn't. What do you make of it all?
Well, Lou, Happy New Year. It's great to be here. And I guess I'll just start with you referencing the think tank. I think the real name for the think tank should be the Penn Biden China funded think tank or the Penn Biden China funded launch pad for Biden appointees, because that's also what it seems like it was. So many of the people in his administration in the foreign policy sort of area, you know, seem to have some affiliation, including Blinken, with this Penn Biden Center.
Yeah, the Penn Biden Center taking large, and when I say large, we're talking $50 million. I mean, I haven't heard of many donations like that to a think tank, especially one as little known and perhaps underappreciated as the Penn Biden think tank or center, more appropriately. I don't even understand how this could go on, because it looks like a payoff of some sort just on its face, and then to find out it was going on for years, has been going on for years.
Right. I mean, I'd like to see legislation, Lou, outlawing our universities from taking money from the Chinese. I mean, you know about these Confucius institutes, which, you know, at least there's been some pushback against that. But, you know, if you're a former vice president who's angling to be president, it seems like you get treated in a different way. And it, you know, it is facially questionable, right? I mean, you know, what Ivy League school wants to hire Biden to be a professor? I mean, the guy at this point, obviously, and I think has been for a while, you know, is senile, as unfortunate as that is, all else being equal. But you know, you just hiring somebody like that as a professor is just gobsmacking.
It truly is. And there is a little known university up in Cambridge that apparently took some $75 million. I saw that in one account. And it's across the country. It's public universities. It's private. They're buying their way into academia in this country, at the same time running intelligence espionage, if you will, operations. It is the Chinese, and there's such little pushback, as you say, the Confucius Institute. So we were told there are about 100 of them. Well, from that first estimate, the number rose. Not only were there in our colleges and universities, but these institutes were in some high schools as well. And there was a reaction, and two or three were shut down. I haven't heard a peep about any other Confucius Center being shut down, even though they were clearly the basis for taking intellectual capital, for learning as much as they could about our trade secrets, whether it's technology or weaponry. It was across, and has been across the country in various forms, whether it's Confucius Institutes or whether it is front companies stealing technology by not the fistful, but by hundreds of billions of dollars a year.
Absolutely, Lou. I mean, the tech areas of our economy, engineering and the hard sciences, have really been infiltrated by the Chinese, and then they take that know-how and intellectual property back to China, ripping us off. But then ideologically, with these Confucius Institutes, right, they're brainwashing students all in the name of kind of, you know, international harmony, even though the Chinese and the Chinese Communist Party are our major enemy and clearly are plotting for our destruction. And it's not that hard to find papers from their thinkers saying that's exactly what their aim is. They're just sapping, you know, digging out the foundations of America from underneath of it. There really should be legislation adopted quickly that would ban this kind of money inflow. And especially, you know, you referred to Harvard obliquely, right? And we have Penn, and, you know, Columbia has long been a bastion of the left, but really, really all of them. I mean, the Ivy League universities, especially Harvard and Yale, and then, you know, the Ivy League West of Stanford, their endowments are enormous. They don't need to take this money in. It's all at some level a kind of, you know, massive greed or massive, you know, they create such a deep pocket that really there can be no competitor. And I don't get it. It makes me ashamed of my alma mater that they engage in these kinds of things. And you know, my mom had been a secretary at the University of Pennsylvania, and, you know, I'd gotten into UPenn as well as to Harvard and several of the other schools. She was kind of heartbroken when I decided to go to Harvard, especially because then I wouldn't be, you know, closer to Philadelphia. But, you know, I think that if she had lived to see this, she would be very disappointed in Penn, which she had idolized.
Yeah, as are lots of people across the country, to think of the opportunity that our universities, our colleges provide young men and women, and to think that this is the way those institutions are behaving. And by the way, when you talk about that, as you very well know, as an alum, Harvard has so much money, and it is the richest, wealthiest endowment in the world. And for them to be, I don't know if influence is quite the correct word, but to be taking that money with the obvious implications that there is a trade, a quid pro quo of some sort, otherwise it doesn't happen, it's really difficult, because it's something that we've got to contend with across this society, across academia. I want to get to that Penn Biden Center again. That the repository of those highest classified documents in the possession of Joe Biden, locked in a closet, and a number of attorneys go in searching for something we don't know what, and we don't know why they were there, but for some reason they were looking for these documents, at least in part, but they didn't have the classification clearances, the security clearance, to be looking at them. So that's really quite curious. If it were a one-off, I'd say, well, that was legit, as the saying goes. But then they also show up at his residence in Wilmington, again, the same attorneys purportedly, but didn't have, again, security clearances. So they found the documents and then made a phone call. This all sounds highly suspicious to me. Your thoughts, Jeff?
So, Lou, I think that raises a very important set of questions. So I had speculated something early on, but then I've been seeing counter speculation. So let me share both speculations with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as new information comes out and as time goes on, I think we'll get closer to one or the other, or maybe it's even something nefarious that, no one is imagining. So what I was thinking was, look, it seems very strange that this information is located just before midterm elections and is leaked to the press on January 9th, so soon, after Congress has changed hands, and so soon after the new anti-weaponization of government subcommittee is created in the Judiciary Committee after the House votes in Speaker McCarthy as part of a larger deal. And so I was wondering whether this is something they've known about for some time, right? I think that the Democrats are almost always guilty of exactly what they try to hurl onto Republicans. And oftentimes they hurl it onto Republicans shortly before it comes out what they were doing. So I have been wondering whether they've known about this for a while. And so they launched in August the outrageous raid on Mar-a-Lago as a way to basically cancel it out. Like, so they get a whole period in the election, in the midterm elections, where they can say, you know, Trump was hoarding classified documents. They get whatever bang that gives them for the election. Then if it turns out that the House or, both houses of the Congress flip and they're going to be investigated, then they come out with, the Biden stuff. And then, the respective two special counsels, Jack Smith for Trump and Robert Hur for Biden, just basically come to a conclusion of, it's not something we're going to prosecute. And then they pretend that everything's even handed. So that was my early speculation. We'll see, whether information comes out that they did know about this before November 2nd. The other speculation that I've seen, which, I just saw a data point this afternoon about, which was a Time Magazine article by Mona Charon, who, really has kind of become one of these folks like Bill Kristol, who, has come out, as someone who probably never really was a conservative in the first place. But, the article is titled something like, "We Expected More of Joe Biden." And, I'm just starting to see the knives come out for him about this. And that speculation has been that they're trying to deep six him so he cannot run in 2024, and they have some kind of replacement lined up, whether it's Gavin Newsom or what it is. And so I think both of those are speculations, but I toss them out for what they're worth.
Well, speculation, informed and intelligent speculation, is certainly a part of what we do here. I am delighted, and I think the audience is delighted to hear that informed and intelligent speculation. And I think that there's a great deal to it. Yep. And the timing, as you mentioned, the discovery on November 2nd, just 6 days before the election, that was peculiar timing, wasn't it? And then the notification to the archives, then the call to the Justice Department, and then suddenly we don't hear any more from them until the 9th of November. the day after the election. There's one doesn't have to speculate, feel too badly about speculating about what is obvious. They waited until after that election was over for this thing to gin up without any question, I think. And I love the reaction of the left. Well, Joe Biden's a nice guy. There's no big deal. This is quite different than Trump. Trump's a bad guy. So this is okay for Joe, but it's not a good thing for Donald. And so with the early reasoning, with all of them forgetting a couple of little minor items, like Joe Biden at this time, those documents were taken, if not outright stolen. He was a vice president, didn't have the right to take any highly classified document home, had no right whatsoever to have them in his possession. And yet after 6 years for some of them, there they are. President Trump, as a president, is the highest authority on classification, can declassify or classify as he will. And everyone wants to forget that. That's quite a difference and a distinction. And all of the braying nonsense from the left here is pitiful, don't you think?
Well, yes, Lou. I think I begin with looking hard at the National Archives, and I think the new Weaponization Committee, or Comer's Oversight Committee, or both, as they see fit, should investigate the National Archives, because it seems like, not too long after President Trump left office, they're crawling all over him looking for documents. You have stories that the archivist at the time watched, Trump leave. I think he was headed for, Marine One or something on the White House lawn. And he got like a white banker's box of documents. And, the story is that the archivist looks at that and he says to himself, I wonder what the hell's inside that box. Well, I'm going to find out. Uh-huh. So, a kind of like spite. So they're all over Trump. But by contrast, the Biden VP documents are taken 6 years ago, and magically no one at the archives seems to have known any the better. They didn't look into it. They didn't try to, rectify whatever their lists were with what documents were actually turned over. And it's a complete double standard. Why is the NARA, the National Archives, why are they behaving like that? And it seems like it's because, the guy running the archives is partisan. And he also specifically said he didn't want to leave office when Trump was there because he wanted to make sure that a Democrat would put in the replacement. So it smells to the high heavens, Lou, and it's something I hope the new House will penetrate into deeply.
I'm really very hopeful that these two committees, well, it's actually expanding rather quickly, isn't it? The Church Committee, the Judiciary Committee, the Oversight Committee. These are committees that are run by first-class individuals who have a purpose and an approach that I really think will pay dividends. I just have very high expectations. And as one of some experience, I know better than get high hopes, but this feels entirely different because of the quality of the people who are spearheading the effort. Your thoughts on that?
I agree. Here at the Center for Renewing America, where I'm a senior fellow and the director of litigation, we had been calling for a church-style committee for a long time. In fact, I was on Tucker's program, but it was guest hosted by Will Kane very shortly after that raid. And, I called for the church style committee there. So, Russ Vogt, our founder and head had been doing the same thing. And so, has been working closely with the House members to try to get that done. So, we're very pleased to see that subcommittee be created. We want to see what they can expose. And we think, look, that the Judiciary Committee, the Oversight Committee, and the subcommittee in Judiciary on the weaponization of government, which is the church style committee, these are all going to be run in fair and above board ways, not like the January 6th committee, where, you know, Banks and Jordan were not allowed to be on the committee at the, you know, directive of Nancy Pelosi. You know, they're going to be Democrats on those, that, that subcommittee. That keeps everybody honest. And, you know, we can see whether, you know, they can push back against the kinds of inquiries that the majority wants to run. But I'm confident that Jim Jordan, for instance, is, he's able to question and debate his way through a lot of fog.
What happens if Hakeem Jeffries appoints Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell? I mean, there has to be some sort of of test here for whoever they put on the on that committee.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if, you know, the Kevin McCarthy, et cetera, if they push back, if there are, you know, folks like that who are proposed. But I think even if there are folks like that who are proposed, you know, I kind of welcome the scrum. So, you know, I think that that Adam Schiff in particular, well, I just said both of them, right? Let's do Adam Schiff and then Swalwell. So first Adam Schiff, right? This guy lied so much about Russiagate that it's not even funny. And he used his sort of, you know, shift dungeon in the basement of the Capitol to, you know, take classified testimony and then come out and purport to say in rough, vague terms what he'd heard when it was all lies, keeping, you know, that fire alight for a long time. And then, as you know about Swalwell, the guy's like, you know, sleeping with a Chinese spy who, when she's discovered, like, poof, she's gone from the country. And, you know, the Democrats tried to weather that as if there's like nothing to see here when, you know, and we obviously had Dianne Feinstein. Obviously, she's in the Senate, not in the House. But this is another example, right? Her driver's a longtime spy. He's working for her. You know, I forget the precise time period, but I think it was at least more than a decade.
I think he was a spy.
I mean, it's just outrageous.
Yeah, I think it was about 20 years, as I recall, but that's only recall. And I admire your sportsmanship in this, but I have to tell you, the thought of listening to Eric Swalwell for 5 minutes and Adam Schiff lie through just a greeting would be, to me, too much to bear. So I hope that that McCarthy and Jeffries put together something of a better relationship and result here. Let's turn to also the Wilmington home where documents were discovered. In the garage, we find out that there are now some questions about Hunter Biden, who had access to the home at least in two years. He said paying $49,000 a month for rent, which you know, that's a terrific thing. I would welcome all our, are you ready, babe? I would welcome back all of our children at $50,000 a month to take any room they wish. what do you make of it?
Yeah, that's a pretty funny observation. Yeah, that's clearly not market rate, but it's much like, you know, Hunter Biden, the new artist, selling paintings for $500,000. You know, the fact that these kinds of things aren't even being investigated is mind blowing. And look, you know, you would think actually with these documents being found, you know, in the garage somewhere at the Wilmington home, and then in you know, like filing cabinets or something nearby inside the house, that, you know, the U.S. attorney in Delaware might be the first one to be involved. But you know, that seems not to be the case, I think, because they realize, right, there's only so much weight they can put on that guy, because he's the guy who seems like he's been assigned to keep a lid on Hunter Biden, you know, to come up with something, but not too much, because, you know, not to get into foreign corruption, but to deal with, you know, smaller time charges like his tax returns. And, you know, I think that look, both of the U.S. attorneys or former U.S. attorneys who have been tapped by the attorney general currently to look at the Biden-related issues. So first it was John Lausch, the U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Illinois, Chicago, who's a former law partner of mine. And then second, it's Robert Herr, who used to be the U.S. attorney in Maryland, you know, to be the special counsel. I mean, both of these guys are really, at best, even though they were Trump appointees, creatures of the establishment. And John Lausch was the only other holdover from the Trump U.S. attorneys other than the one in Delaware that I was adverting to, who's looking at Hunter Biden. And so, you know, both of them, I think, you know, AG Garland is looking for someone who can provide, you know, a patina of Republican respectability, as it were, or at least, you know, little bit of protection in that regard, right? He hasn't picked one of the hard gunner Democrats. He's trying to pick someone who looks like a Republican. But I don't think that either of them, and I know both of them, really are, you know, hardcore conservatives. So I don't think the American people should expect that someone who you know, really would give, you know, super thorough look at Biden in this, you know, document situation are really going to turn over all leaves. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, let me put it in Dobbs speak. They're left-wing hacks, aren't they?
Well, I mean, I've had conversations with John Lausch, and he and I work closely on some major litigation together, like probably the largest multi-district litigation in U.S. history. And, you know, I had a little bit of interaction with Robert Herr. I mean, they didn't come across as left-wing hacks to me, but they also didn't come across to me as enthusiastic Trump supporters. So I remember congratulating John. I think his nomination was announced after mine, you know, and I said something like, it'd be great to serve together in the Trump administration. And all I got was kind of like a flat thanks. Like, I didn't get anything like, yeah, I'm, you know, looking forward to serving the president in Chicago or something like that. So yeah. I think both of them, they're very middle of the road. But I guess maybe as to Robert Herr, you know, who now does have the special counsel job, I have more serious concerns because, you know, the IG had noted that he was involved in the Steele dossier issues. And I don't understand how you can appoint someone under the requirement for the special counsel regulations, in particular section 600.3, who they have to have a reputation for impartiality. I mean, I think what happened with the Steele dossier should disqualify anyone from having a reputation for impartiality.
I think it should disqualify any person from frankly walking the streets. They should be in jail. The effect of the Steele dossier and the way in which it was utilized was as a bludgeon against a sitting president, with the full knowledge on the part of the FBI and the Department of Justice that it was a pack of lies and pure nonsense. It was an attempt to frame the president of the United States. I know I'm a little more direct than you, but these two have to be disqualified, as far as I'm concerned, for the simple reason that Merrick Garland is the attorney general and he appointed them. Merrick Garland has the soul, a dark soul, I'll put it that way.
So you know, I know we've had these kinds of discussions before, but here's what I will say. I think, you know, that Robert Herr, he tried to block the Nunes memo in January of 2018. And, you know, he claimed there'd be damage to national security from that. But I think quite the contrary. The damage to national security was relying on, you know, this MI6 guy, Steele, and Danchenko's lies in the first place, right? And,
absolutely.
You know, it was all based on this idea of the Russians were trying to influence the election. Even the Washington Post at this point has admitted that the Russian bots, you know, were a drop in the bucket. They had like nil impact on the 2016 election. It was always a farce. You know, during this same.
Well, it was, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jeff, but it was a farce, perpetrated as a fraud on the American people. And that's quite a different, statement. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that it was a farce that was perpetrated on the American people and did them really wrong, and basically was an attempt to deny President Trump his first term. Yeah. By always keeping, you know, this cloud over his head of somehow he was, you know, a Russian asset, which was ridiculous from the outset. Anyone who had, you know, the modicum of a brain would have known that that was ridiculous, that it was President Trump who was pushing to, you know, restore America, wanted to face off against our biggest adversary, China, you know, wanted to see a return of economic nationalism, wanted to get us out of foreign wars. And so, you know, the allegation that he was just doing Putin's bidding was always silly. And, you know, we even have the fact that during this same era at the Justice Department, right, we have an FBI lawyer, Kevin Kleinsmith, who falsified a FISA affidavit, right, to make it look like, you know, Carter Page, you know, was not essentially a source for the CIA when he darn well knew that he was, and he pleaded guilty of that. And, you know, that you got people floating around the FBI like this. I mean, Kleinsmith had texted, you know, vive la resistance in response to, right, Trump. He said that the crazies have won finally. This is the Tea Party on steroids. I mean, no one who is sending texts around who's an FBI employee like this, not serving their boss, the commander in chief, the chief executive of the United States, should be in office. It's a disgrace.
Yeah, Jeff, when it comes to Kleinsmith, let's be very, again, very direct. John Durham was appointed by Bill Barr to create immunity for Kleinsmith, and he did a very good job of it. And so far, he hasn't won a thing. He hasn't uncovered a thing, and there is no resolution in sight. The man is running out the game, and while providing cover for the deep state. What do you think of my conclusion there on that?
I mean, you know, if you follow the good Lord's statement in various gospels that, you know, you judge a tree by its fruits, you know, it's hard to argue with that, right? I mean, right, you know, so Kleinsmith did plead guilty, and I believe he lost his license, at least for a time, in Michigan. But, you know, he's still up on the D.C. Bar website as in good standing, you know, so soon after having pled guilty. You know, meanwhile, for wanting to investigate the election, you know, the D.C. Bar is still coming after me. So, you know, that contrast is pretty striking to me, even at a personal level.
As it should be. I mean, it should be. It should also be disgusting to us all that this is the way in which the Department of Justice, so-called, pursues its ideological enemies, because that is the only explanation. They view every Republican, every conservative, as an enemy of the state. When in point of fact, in my view, the deep state and the Marxist Dems are truly the enemy of the enemies of the Republic. I want to turn, if we may, as we conclude here, to where we go from here. We have two special counsels appointed. A former president, a current president, and former vice president, two quite different cases, two special counsels, an attorney general who is appallingly ideological and unworthy of the office he holds, a president who's impaired, and we now have Adam Schiff talking about the speculation that he's reached the end of his road, according to the Politburo of the Marxist Dem Party. Where do we go from here?
Well, I think that people need to continue to put pressure on their own representatives to get to the bottom of all of this, Lou, in an honest way, right? I mean, we know that the January 6th committee was a one-sided operation that operated as a star chamber. They're still keeping hundreds and hundreds of depositions locked away. Those all need to come out, as do the documents that were provided in the process and the videos, and especially the 14,000 hours of security footage around the Capitol on January 6th. All that needs to come out. And I think, you know, your listeners need to keep pressing for that. I think that, you know, for anyone who's listening to you, who's still listening to, you know, CNN and and MSNBC, et cetera, or really taking the Times and the Washington Post seriously, you know, they need to broaden their media input and stop listening to the fake media And then, you know, we have to watch carefully what emerges from the oversight process and the oversight committee, the Judiciary Committee, and the Judiciary Subcommittee, the Church Style Committee. I think those are going to be vital, and we can't let up on that pressure.
Jeff, thanks for being with us. I'm going to, if you have a concluding thought, we always give you the last word. Why don't you give us your concluding thoughts about where we are now? And let me say, it's always great to have you with us, and thanks for joining us.
Well, Lou, I always enjoy talking with you about these issues. You're very, studied on all of the latest developments. I think that this story about the Biden documents is far from over. I think we're going to continue to see more and more come out about it. I'm interested as well in whether this is something that's potentially designed to nudge Smith, since his jurisdiction is broader than hers. Hers is just looking at document issues for Biden, but Smith has both document issues for Trump and the January 6th related, narrative issues. And he's opened a lot of grand jury investigations by all accounts. So this may be also part of a kind of sophisticated effort to put pressure on him to come up with some way to bring an indictment against Trump or in some kind of connection to January 6th. So this is a very interesting time. I mean, I think it's a time that some reasons for optimism, because the House changed hands and it's shown that it wants to be aggressive in doing investigations and oversight. But by the same token, the Biden Justice Department and these special counsels are still in place. It just seems as if there's an endless fascination with and obsession with President Trump. I mean, I've never seen a past president in U.S. history, and you've seen more than I have, Lou, it's like he is the president, or he's in the news every day in the mainstream media. They just have some visceral reaction to him, some hatred to him that is inexplicable, and some deep psychological problem.
I can solve part of that mystery. Donald Trump is, first of all, extraordinarily attractive to the left, because they can fundraise off of him and all the lies and myths that they built around him all day long. And the national corporate media makes lots of money on their circulation, their distribution, and their audience size, and their ratings, by focusing on Donald Trump. It is because they fear him. He is such a challenge to the status quo and to the swamp system in Washington, D.C., that what has grown up here is an industry, and it is an attempted assassination every day of a former president that we see in the national media and on the part of the Marxist Dems. That's my thought, since you raised it. I'm going to give you, if we may, your reaction, and we'll call it a show.
Sounds good, Lou. So, yeah, I agree. I think it's because they fear him. And that's because he was incredibly effective, even though they had this whole Russiagate scam running in an attempt to deny him the first term in office. He was still, far more effective than a Bush 43 or a Bush 41. And it terrifies the heck out of them of, what if he really got a fair shot and he didn't have to fight all this stuff all the time? What could he accomplish in a second term? And so that's why I think they're bound and determined to try to destroy him and his legacy.
And I think we're going to get a chance to find out in 2024. I believe it's written in the fates. We'll see. Thank you very much, Jeff Clark. Thanks so much. Great American. Great to have you with us.
Thanks, Lou.
Great American Jeffrey Clark with the Center for Renewing America. And by the way, congratulations to the center. The center originated the idea of creating a House committee to investigate the weaponization of the Department of Justice, the FBI, and intel community. And Speaker McCarthy liked the idea. That investigation is now underway. Thanks, everybody, for being with us today. Here tomorrow, our guest is Attorney Kevin Evans. He's looking into Department of Justice records that pertain to gifts and payoffs to the Biden family. He'll have the latest for us here tomorrow. Till then, God bless you and God bless America.